Hey there. Hey there, Crime Stoppers. Daniel Markham here at DanielBMarkham.com. We're here for another week of Nerd Roundup. And if you haven't been with Nerd Roundup before, basically what we do is sit around and talk about the tech news of the past week and just have fun. We believe here in modeling the behavior you'd like to see with other folks. And a good team should be relaxed enough to sit around and talk about dang near anything. And that's what we like doing. So belly up to the lunch counter, grab your favorite sandwich, and join me and James Gritting this week as we talk about the week's tech news. James, welcome.
Daniel,
how have you been this past week?
I've been good. I've been good. Nose to the grindstone.
Now that is quite a hat there. I like that hat you got. That is a
A friend of mine, it was his dad's. It doesn't quite fit me, so I might not wear it, but I like the hat. It was nice he gave it to me. And one of my dad's old buddies that the son is also my good friend. And, so the hat's got history.
The underside of that sort of looks like if you've ever had a Tully or a Tilly hat, the Canadian outdoor hat, those are really cool. The ribbed underside, not very nice.
Yeah, no. Nope.
I've been doing a little bit of everything. Been doing some bash coding. I have been screwing around with some stuff on TV. I wrote this 3,000 word essay the other week, and so it's stuff. It is work, my friend.
Yeah. I've been moving video files around. I created like a year and a half ago, or starting a year and a half ago, and then stopping 6 months ago because of other things getting in the way. I'd created all these videos for my self-paced training class, and then got pulled off of it for, personal and work reasons. And now I got to get back into it. And so I've been cataloging all the stuff I created and trying to get it so that I have all the pieces, and that as I make changes, I can pipeline them up to Vimeo where they need to be. So
similar for me, I did this full page diagram, and I'll do diagrams for about a half a year or a year, and I'll come up with half a dozen sort of technical diagrams. And then there becomes like a day of lamination where I get the laminator, and I'll laminate dang near anything and getting that little thing, because it's leaf blowers and laminators. I love them. I just can't get enough of them. Yeah. So this week we've had a bunch of kicked this off with a sad piece of news. John McAfee was found dead in Spanish jail after court approves extradition. Have you ever met John?
No.
I haven't either. No. I figured we'd just skip through this quickly. If you want to, there's a link here. You can go to the Hacker News part, and there's a lot of people that's worked with him in the past. I think I saw maybe 10 minutes of video he did for the presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard people talk about him, and he just sort of looks like one of those really eccentric characters that you rarely run into.
Well, bad place to be found in a Spanish jail. It's better than a Mexican jail, but not to make light of it. But
no, he had a tattoo that said whacked on his arm, and he said, if they ever find me suicided, I wasn't the one that did it. And so once you say that, it's kind of hard to figure out really what happened after that. But yeah, he was an interesting character. I think they're going to come out with a book or movie. So I'm definitely going to check that out.
Gringo, The Dangerous Life of John McAfee, huh?
Yeah.
That can be the name of it?
He was blogging about all of these crazy drug exploits, and it was amazing. Where are we at here? The next one I want to do is, I don't have the link up, but there's this pot story. Was that the first thing to check?
Yeah, how did that work its way into the Nerd Roundup?
Well, I think I was reading Hacker News last week, and somebody just started talking about, when they found all that pot in Yellowstone or Yosemite. I was like, what? I don't remember that. And then turns out there was a plane that crashed in the 70s with tons of pot, and the authorities couldn't get up there to get it. And so the hikers and hippies and folks, they called it Dope Lake. It would just hike up and take an axe and dig out, I guess, bags of pot and go into town and sell it. And
yeah, I read that article. It's amazing how motivated pot-smoking hippies can get.
Well, you think you just sit around. Yeah, you think you just sit around watching Cheech and Chong movies, but no, it's.
I make no admissions to anything, but back in the day, people would sit around and watch Cheech and Chong movies all day.
Yes,
I wouldn't think diving in an ice cold lake. If you needed some pot, I suppose you would take an axe and cut a frozen lake.
One guy said they made the equivalent of I think $20,000. One guy said he made the equivalent of $20,000, which would be, $20,000 in those terms, it would be $100,000 today. So, $100,000. I think I put the bong down for a little bit for a day or two. Well,
you could sell, $19,000 worth of it and then keep the rest, right?
So, I'm hoping my mother-in-law doesn't hear this, and she's not a tech person, so I think we should be okay. But we went to visit them last weekend, and Virginia is legalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
And I don't really care. I'm not a pot smoker. I don't care one way or another. But I think she's she's from that previous generation that, you know, the devil's cabbage or whatever.
Right.
And she went
on. Illinois is a state where you can buy it. And I did a drive-by of one of the places, and it looked like a place I didn't really want to go. Everybody in line, cameras on everybody, so it's like, you're free to go get some pot here as long as you don't mind being recorded doing it. And with the cops there, it was like kind of an interesting thing.
They have cops there.
I don't need it.
I'm good. Yeah, I think I messed up enough without getting into a pot habit. I'm fine. But it tickled me that she was quite vehement about this. I'm like, what are you concerned about? People like driving at 30 miles an hour, like hunched over? I mean, what is the horrible thing that's going to happen here?
Maybe some people start sleeping better.
People could sleep better, yeah.
If that was true, I sleep pretty good anyway, but I know people that don't. So
potato chip manufacturers could be a big boom for those guys.
Yeah.
You ever been to White Castle restaurant?
Well, that's a staple in the south side of Chicago. I'm a north side person. We happen to have one about 5 miles from us here, which is unusual. But my son-in-law is a big White Castle guy. He grew up south of the Mason-Dixon line. You know, they're Sox fans. We're north, so we'd be Cubs fans,
Okay.
They've got a mixed marriage, daughters, Cubs fan. And now the kids are confused. They've got both Cubs and Sox paraphernalia.
Just don't bring a goat. Don't do the goat thing, because the goat's going to be bad.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure about the goat thing. So they're not being raised by mongooses either, so.
Yeah, it's a mongoose. Turns out mongoose actually have a sophisticated social structure that's fair to all of the little mongoose. Maybe they asked the little mongoose whether they like living there. I don't know, but that was a sign. The title was something about mongoose live in a more equitable environment. I just didn't know how a mongoose would know that they were living in an equitable environment or not.
Yeah, well, alligators live in an equitable environment. And in their equitable environment, the mother alligator is as likely to eat her own babies as somebody else's.
Oh, wow.
So.
I think that I hate to sound like old cranky dude. I know I'm going to sound like something. I'm going to say it anyway, okay? I think Disney, by doing all these movies with talking animals, did a really horrible thing to generations of people who then have to reason about nature and animals, and they're unequipped to do that.
Oh, Daniel, I don't know. I don't think so. This is not Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse. Well, Bugs wasn't Disney anyway. Yeah, Looney Tunes, that was my favorite, Bugs Bunny. But no, kids understand.
Okay.
And if they grow up and don't understand that, there's something else wrong. Just saying.
You mean Bugs Bunny isn't real?
Bugs Bunny isn't real, and even if you're like Garth from what was that movie that was filmed in Chicago? You know the
Blues Brothers?
Not Bruce, Blues Brothers, but Mike Myers was in it. Wayne's World.
Wayne's World.
So Garth he thought Bugs Bunny, when he got dressed up like a woman, was sexy. No, Wayne's World.
I don't know how to handle that, James. Bugs, he's a nice looking bunny, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, so if kids don't actually get it, so Garth may be a special case, but.
I can't go too far. I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I thought Star Trek was real when I was a kid.
So well, it was.
Yeah, I my mom asked me one for Christmas. I told her a Starship Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And I pestered her for, and she's like, look, it's just a TV show. It's not real. And I said, but you can see this channel. Here's the channel, the TV station. And we've drove by there and they got big antennas on top. So they must be getting signals from somewhere. I had the whole thing reasoned out.
Yep.
Okay. I don't believe it now anymore, of course.
Okay. But how about this Black Sea thing? This is pretty amazing.
Yeah, this is more disturbing than most people probably think. Positions of two NATO ships were falsified near Russian Black Sea naval base. So
they never left their port where they were, you know, where they're supposed to be.
Right.
And then the Russians were getting ready to go to DEFCON, whatever number, because the images of these boats showed up, these ships right next to their port, right? That's a deal?
Yeah, well, the thing is that I guess the chief of naval operations, they looked at this tracking information all ships carried, and they found that it had been spoofed by somebody, probably the Russians, to show that our ships were actually inside Russian ports, that we were violating national law and being aggressive and all that. And the Navy had to come out and say, look, here's webcams of our ships sitting in the harbor. We couldn't have been two places at once.
But we've seen NCIS. We know those webcams can be faked real easy by a lightning-fast hacker.
You're getting ahead of the show. So the nerdy story here is that if you're not careful, an adversary can come in and hack up all this data over a period of years, little small pieces of data, that then when a crisis happens, they can go back and do this reverse narrative. Like, oh, here's all these times they broke the rules, and we didn't say anything, and so now we're justified in doing something horrible.
Hmm. Well, you know, in a way, this isn't a surprising story, because we're just talking about hacking a very sophisticated system, and that's what people do.
Yes. Yeah, it's just, I think what we're starting to see is kind of goes back to this recurring thing of deep fakes. And this is sort of deep fake history, where they just sort of manipulate little small things throughout history and then try to convince you of some sort of bullshit narrative later on.
Yeah, so is it your theory that that the Ruskies did it? Or, because maybe I didn't read the whole article.
It looks a lot like a Russian disinformation campaign. Yeah. And I'm thinking the Russians were hoping that they didn't get caught, because this is much better sitting on the net for 4 or 5 years. And so the Navy, at that point, the Navy's kind of stuck. They have to come out and say, hey, time out, this is bullshit. Because if they don't, the longer they leave it in, they'll end up in Wikipedia and all other places. You can't chase that stuff down even a month later.
Yeah, right. Because it looked like you made up the evidence to cover up the cover-up.
And then it becomes a he said, she said. And that's where you want, as an adversary, that's where you want to go. Oh, it's just sort of all confusing.
Yeah.
So next up is the absurdity of peer review, what the pandemic revealed about peer review. And we talked about this last week. Like I said, I'm not an anti-academic. Your son has an associate professorship.
Right.
But this guy did a wonderful essay, and this predates the pandemic. And the idea of sending out your work to a bunch of people who are in your clique, whom each of you rely on the approval of the other, doesn't really seem like a really good way of doing science. That's the only point here. I don't know if you've ever watched sort of the Tonight Show or some of these other celebrity shows. They'll bring somebody on, a producer or director of a movie. What do you think of Harrison Ford or whatever? And everybody's always awesome. I've never heard anybody say, yeah, that guy was a real asshole. And the reason they don't do that is you don't trash the people who you need to say that you're okay.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, and so I never really thought about the peer review thing, but certainly I would imagine that there's some pluses from it. Like, you didn't make up the state, or if somebody tried to replicate what was in it, there'd be some pluses to that. But that's different than peer review, right?
Yes.
That's trying to reproduce. So,
the reason I'm still interested in this has really not pandemic, it's not reproducibility crisis, it's that we sort of somehow need to rejigger, refactor how we're doing science, and this sort of plays into that larger discussion.
Yep. Yeah, so if you wrote a paper and you had me review it and then you made like a big deal about it that James reviewed this, it's like, okay, so I didn't see any typos, but I probably wouldn't see them anyway. But
See that. Part of this, and we see this in programming, is the longer you spend with some work, some intellectual work you're putting forward, the more emotionally attached you become to that work.
Yeah, sure.
And so you get somebody who's maybe spent 10 years and written their thesis and all this stuff on a thing that doesn't hold water. You really want to like shoot down both of the career and their life and their values. It's, wow, it's a lot riding on something that really should not, you know, shouldn't be like that.
Yeah. I suppose patents could be similar too. Right, you know, some idea in a patent that maybe, yeah, okay, you could patent that, and we'll let you spend the money with the patent office, but maybe it's just not, maybe no. I just remember being involved in a patent that a company wanted to pursue back in the 90s, and in the end it was a big, well, maybe we won't bother. It's like, okay, good.
Yeah, I wonder, that's interesting, that's very interesting. I wonder if we could go to a front-loaded system where there's a sort of the equivalent of the patent office for scientific research and experiments, that you would submit what you're expecting for a result, your methodology, and then they would decide whether or not it's novel or whatever. And you could even do it anonymously if you wanted to before you even started any kind of work on it. That'd make you publish what you thought, you know, your hypothesis that we probably couldn't do this p-hacking crap. It would solve a couple problems at one time, I think.
Did you want to be a researcher?
No, my current job is thinking up goofy shit. I really want to stick with that as long as possible.
Oh, you research goofy shit. Okay.
I don't research. I just think, you know, I don't actually do any reading on this shit. I consider myself a writer. I did a lot of freelance writing and research as part of that, and that was fun.
Yeah, I'm like amazed at what you write. It's like really good, the stuff I've read.
Thank you, sir.
And I don't know where you have the time for it.
It's misspent youth, more than anything else.
Yeah, okay.
So this is from several years back. I thought of this, and I thought, well, I should include it in one of these nerd roundups before I forget about it. Somebody said, what is the happiest 5 words you could hear? And I think this was Reddit. And the answer was, hey, how about you just won the lottery? And this guy wrote this beautiful response, and he's an attorney. And I'm not going to go through it, but oh, my goodness gracious. It is... If you're interested in a long read about why you just won the lottery, it might be the worst thing you'd ever want to hear, this would be the place to go. Yeah, this is just...
I read about half of it, and it's like I was ready to, go take some downers or something. No, I wasn't going to do that, but...
One guy was already had a job. He already had the money he needed. He said, he's a construction supervisor, if I remember correctly. I'll just keep being a construction boss and... They tried to poison his own crew and family, tried to kill him.
Yeah, it's like, so I was, thinking about that guy. He already had like a net worth of $15 million, so he was already, you know, a wealthy guy. So who else could he absorb $100 million and not, have it destroy his life, right, after taxes, or $175, whatever it was. And so he thought he'd be able to. He didn't think he'd be able to. But he couldn't because everybody hounds him. It's like all the people sob stories. I guess the only way to do it would be if there's any way to keep it totally anonymous.
Yes.
But,
there's a story. I think the reason I came here, there was a story about a Western Pennsylvania or Western Maryland town where the person won the 7th largest lotto jackpot. I think it was several $100 million. And that state has a law that you can be anonymous, but they still published the store that sold the ticket. And so they got this town with only 100 families in it, and the store owner is getting letters from all over the world asking for free stuff. Like, hey, can I have a new house because I need one? And he's like, no, I'm not going to buy some strange guy houses.
Yeah, what does the store owner get? They don't get 10%, like it said, did they?
They get a cut. I think it varies from state to state.
It's a pretty damn good cut, I understand, compared to like when you're, I mean, if it's a multi-$100 million prize, you're going to get a lot of money. But
It's interesting talking about this lottery thing. The cryptocurrency guys are running the same situation, only they're not as famous because you can have a little wallet, a crypto wallet, with any amount of money you want on there. And once somebody knows you're carrying around millions and millions of dollars, I mean, there have already been cases of people being kidnapped and said, look, we're going to cut your fingers off one by one, or either that or you release the codes to get into your wallet, get all your money.
I heard about some famous guy that lost his password. He's got tons of crypto in his wallet.
Yeah, I can't keep track of my car keys between here and the car. I can't imagine like having $10 million in like a little wow, it's weird.
Yeah, on a computer somewhere.
Or right. Or in your hand, you could put it on a USB drive. You could just it's just bits. Put them anywhere.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't really. That's the crazy thing. If you had $10 million in the real world, you'd have a lawyer, an accountant. You know, it'd be a whole big distance just carried around in a little speck.
I wonder, you know, those guys that can memorize pi to like a million decimal places, maybe they could just memorize their bitcoins. Yeah. would they do that in hex or would they do that in binary? I'm just wondering.
I think that you need a multi-gigabyte connection just to do mining. And I think these you'd have to have a pretty good memory. Pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
I know it start. I've got this $10 million. I know it starts with a 7. I think it ends with a 3. It? There's only about three billion.
Now, was that decimal, hex, or octal?
I don't know. It seemed like we were base 32 for a while. So this next one is really cool. It's a shame Bob couldn't make it because this has got Bob written all over it. This is the lead developer at Factorio. Did a blog about, hey, we read some of Bob's stuff and picked up TDD, and dang, it's really working for us really nicely.
Yeah, that was cool to hear because he had the experience that many people have. Oh, I was wrong about what test-driven development is.
Yes.
And then when I found out what it was, oh, I think I'll do that. It's going to really be helpful.
Who knew?
Yeah, who would have ever known? Well, you know.
Nobody told me. I was also interested in some of the examples he gave. What was it, the second example, I think? He does this thing. Yeah, he talks about doing UI work. And he said, you know, it used to be that we'd set together. First we'd make a button. A map generator had a button as a property. Then we'd have to set a listener on to the button. Then we'd have to do it on mouse click. And this was all methods they were writing. And he said,
right, and then they put a switch case on the. They'd send all the events to one switch case to go in.
Well, they were doing. Oh, but each like the listener was an object, the receiver's an object, the UI thing was everything an object, man. And so he finally realized that maybe I should use a lambda. And when he said that, I had this picture of like a 47 line lambda stuck in. But all he really did was on click, he just called direct. He just did his own virtual dispatching. So on the click of the UI object, he just calls into his business class.
Just call the thing that needed to be called at that instant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that little bit of wiring, that lambda,
I completely agree with what he did. It's just when he started talking about he was realizing he was using too much code, as a functional guy, I was saying, well, shit, you just go through and loop through all your buttons and you do this. I was thinking of a data format cutting across all the UI. And what he did was actually just took each element and called into the appropriate. There's no right or wrong here, but what I thought was interesting was once you start thinking in terms of classes, like he was at first, he had all these classes, a listener class, this class, that class, it becomes difficult to read, sort of jigger what needs to go. TDD helps you sort of figure that out.
Yeah, and then look at that code right above my head here. Where is it? That's there. Yeah, so. What event did I get? Which button was it? Right now, when you designed the button, you knew what it was supposed to be hooked to. And, there's two buttons there, so they could have been hooked to two different things. Instead, they got hooked to one thing that it had to go figure out what happened after it happened when you already knew what happened.
Yes.
So why not just wire to the thing that could react to the thing that's supposed to happen?
This is the typical problem with code bases is that one person comes in with convention over practicality. And then everything gets coded by that convention and says somebody reasoning through actually what needs to happen here.
Yeah.
It's textbook, like how to make a huge code base nobody can get anything done with. It's like you go by the book and you just follow this pattern and the pattern always works. And suddenly some guy's got, 200,000 lines of code that they have to sort of wade through.
Yeah.
Yes, it was good stuff. It's a good article if you guys are interested in TDD. Yes.
I was trying to figure out what the cool gaming graphics are. Is it just examples of his game, or was he trying to? Was there a metaphor there for dead code or something?
Oh yeah, these are six different ways that you can interact with the GUI. And see, when you drag things like this lower left, this guy right here, when you drag things, it makes a ghosted version of the UI element. See the little green ghosted version here?
Yeah.
Well. The ghosted version has to interact with the things on the screen as if it were already there. So you have to build. He builds two models. So one is the current game as it's playing. The other one is what is if you drop this thing right here.
Yeah.
and that turned out to be twice the code. And then he ends up, it expands out to like 4 or 8 times as much code because he has to carry, he's building like multiple models of what might or might not happen.
Hmm.
And it's just, wow. It's like, dang, I can see where you'd have a lot of code doing that.
You ever played this game?
Oh my, I've spent probably, I don't know, 300, 400 hours on it. I haven't played in the last year because when I started playing, I went.
You're married, right?
Yeah, I went for 2 or 3 days. I went a whole weekend, I think, just playing Factorio.
You were married for a whole weekend?
It's my first marriage. I think it went 4 or 5 days, actually. Yeah, they right. If you get married by Elvis in Vegas, it usually doesn't last as long as you think it would be. The next story is hit by a ransomware attack. Your payment may be deductible. So just to back up, I think you were here a week or two ago. First, the IRS says, hey, if you pay money to somebody offshore that's holding your stuff for ransom, you could be penalized for that because you're not supposed to send money overseas or anywhere without, you know, doing the paperwork. And so the feedback was, okay, so I've lost all my data. I've had to come up with $5 million, and now you're going to kick me in the butt while I'm laying on the ground. And then now the IRS is going, okay, we'll change this. Now you can deduct all of this. It's okay, fine. You can rob yourself of $10 million. Woo, take it home to the bank.
To call them back later.
I keep wanting you to say it was, you know, there are a million stories in the Naked City. This is one of them.
Yeah. So, looking at that, it's like, okay, so do we want to reward that? You know, I get like 7 ransomware things every day. You know, what they don't know is that there's nothing here for them to ransom. So, they thought they had something. And if I actually was guilty of what they were saying in the email, maybe you'd be afraid, but actually not guilty of all the stuff they said I did that they uncovered in their hacking of me. So I'm not going to pay.
Yeah, I feel for the companies because I don't see any sort of legislative regulatory way out of this because at the end of the day, they've got all your data and you need to pay them or you can't run your business. And it's just all down to them.
So why do they have all their data? What's wrong with their – do you think that there's a – do they somehow destroy their backup ability and their recovery ability?
Okay, so what you do, and this is fun times, is you hack into their system and you write a daemon that goes through and encrypts all their data, and it's transparent. So they just continue to use their system while it's being encrypted. Then you pull the daemon out in the keys, and it's like, hey, you still have all your data. It doesn't work anymore unless I give you the key.
Mm. So even if I backed it up and could look at it, and see that
it would look fine until they pulled the keys out. But if you keep like daily backups over a period of a month or two, you could probably roll back to 4 or 5 weeks earlier. And it would hurt, but it wouldn't be. But who keeps that much data on backup?
Yeah, right. That reminds me, I better do a backup right now.
Yeah, I let Amazon handle that stuff. Amazon and Dropbox.
Amazon what?
Amazon and Dropbox.
Yeah.
This is a cool article called Deep Reinforcement Learning Will Transform Manufacturing as We Know It. This had a phrase was they had an arm farm at Google.
An arm farm.
An arm farm. So what happens is you teach, I guess, one robot arm to do something. It teaches the next robot arm. And so you have 1,000 robot arms doing things.
Oh, you didn't mean like the ARM processor.
No, I mean like real ARMs.
This was not in here yesterday.
Do you think this phrase was not in here earlier? What? Oh, wow. James, you have a hole in your head.
Better than having this coronavirus.
Yeah. Oh, well, I really want, I need to get some more green screen things to play with because that just looks way too cool. So the cool thing here is that robot technology is actually taking off even more than we might imagine. And Hyundai just bought Boston Dynamics. And so this doesn't mean we're going to see like a robot butler, but it means we're going to have a lot of really cool manufacturing innovation coming down next 5 years or so, I think. You know, America is actually, I think, number two or three manufacturer in the world.
Of
everything. People don't know
of that. Everything.
People say, you know, we're not making anything in this country anymore. Well, we do, but we have highly automated systems, and we make usually higher end stuff. So we're way up there in a list of things people manufacture stuff. We just don't employ that many people manufacturing.
Yeah, okay. So that means you got to think for a living to be part of the creation of more automation.
Yeah, you're going to have to, you're not going to be the robot. You're going to have to program the robot. This is a great article. It's a charity kind of deal. It's just called Internet in a Box. And the idea is, that you just take Wikipedia, you take the Khan Academy. There's probably a dozen different these sort of charitable information sources. Stick them on a hard drive in a waterproof, ruggedized PC. They don't need to have the internet or anything. Just give them the box and they can learn.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then powered by a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah,
Terabyte hard drive with a Raspberry Pi. That was pretty cool.
I need to get another Pi. I haven't got any of the 4s. I really want to get one of the 4s.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So you know I use Cyber Dojo in my training classes. So Cyber Dojo. And when you make donations to Cyber Dojo, what they do is they buy computers and things for people and disadvantaged people so they have a chance to learn how to program.
That's great.
And it's pretty cool. You know, so all the donations. So donate to Cyber Dojo. I'm saying right here. So they help out, so that kids can have this experience of having a computer that they could actually learn how to do something with.
Right? I was reading, maybe it's 5 or 10 years back, where the people were using shipping containers, and the idea would be to create a connected system where you drop the container, because you can drop a shipping container almost anywhere, and the container would be self-powered, solar-powered, it'd have satellite internet and ruggedized again. You just put it anywhere. Nuclear people power. Have a little cafe there.
Yep. All right.
That's cool, too. So next up is, and I don't want to break this to folks, but it looks like we're having a problem with dwarfs. I've read that we had a dwarf galaxy we discovered. There's some dwarf suns near us, and now it turns out a possible dwarf planet from the Oort cloud could be coming within 11 AU of us. I don't know what these dwarfs want with us. Have you heard anything about this, James?
Well, this showed up in your list, and I had just gotten it from Space Weather. There's a cool graphic, which, all those words that you've got in there, if you read it and integrate it into your brain, you get an idea that this thing came from far away, and it's going to come and be far away still, near Saturn.
Yeah, I don't have the link up right now. I brought it up earlier. Somehow it went away. Yeah. But there, you've got the JPL.
Want me to chat it to you?
No, I've got it. I just didn't want to... Yeah. Do the delay here.
I just think it is so cool because it shows the size of the parabola that this 2014 UN 27271 is on, and affectionately known as Bertinelli Bernstein.
Here we go.
Oh, it's in it.
Turn on JavaScript.
Oh, it's you got an animation of it?
Yeah, this is the site you were talking about just now.
Oh, I never pushed the button.
Yeah, you've got a whole. I've been wanting to play this with this for years. It's one of the reasons I thought it was so cool. JPL actually has a solar system simulator, and so you can play planets forwards and backwards. You can look at what probe would go where, and so it's like a sort of SimCity for the solar system.
Uh huh.
And here we have the orbit of this planet. As you can see, it's quite this dwarf planet. It is quite inclined. It's way out there.
Yeah, look at that thing.
Yeah,
I'm running it backwards. I shouldn't let it come in. Oh, and it's going opposite of our planets. Cool.
Oh wow, I didn't see that. There he is. I see him right here.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, so the thing is, goes really far away. I bet there's gonna be some space probes going to this thing.
Well, that's really talked about. Should we send a space probe to intercept this? Because if we get a piggyback ride in this thing, you go way out in the Oort cloud. The problem is, if you had the energy to intercept this dwarf planet, you would have the energy to go out there anyway. So you're not really gaining a lot by just sort of meeting up with a big bunch of rocks.
Seriously? Oh, okay. Because once you hurl the thing out there, it would keep going anyway.
Yes. Okay. I think if you could get on like the sort of like following a car, if you could come in from behind it, you could just accelerate to where it is, and then you would use the gravitational slingshot of the entire mass to go. Then you could gain some energy. But the way we're looking at it from the Seuss angle, not only do you have to catch up to its speed, you also have to sort of move position in the solar system. So it's actually more expensive than just going out to the Oort cloud.
Darn.
Yeah.
Or maybe you get some company there with that rock. That'd be just kind of cool to do anyway. But well, I think you're going to want to, you know, hurl a projectile into it or something and see what it's made out of, right?
That would be fun. Oh, yeah, I would be all for that. That would show the dwarfs not to send any more plants.
Yep. Speaking of dwarfs, I've been watching the Game of Thrones. I picked it up again. It's like, boy, they have a lot of ways of killing people. But, yeah, the dwarf is in trouble. Just saying.
I never watched it. Did you enjoy that Game of Thrones?
Oh, I'm kind of waiting for the dragons to have a bigger part in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really like the first season, and then now it's, well, I don't know. I'm not quite so sure. I'm in the middle of it right now, so.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff there. This one I watched. Oh, what was that? Manifest with the airplane that airplane disappears, reappears like 5 years later. All the people wondering what happened, and then and it was how to take a 10-minute story and stretch it into 5,000 episodes, basically. Kind of pulled down to. I just leave it running on the TV, go into the room, come back. They hadn't made any progress on the story at all. 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, well, Game of Thrones takes a little bit more time because there is like 7 different kingdoms and, you know, a lot of bad actors and, you know.
Wasn't Game of Thrones, somebody told me that the book that's been something of Fire and Ice, like had like 20 pages of characters at the beginning that you had to know.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Next up is theoretical Lentz drive could make Star Trek warp technology a reality.
And you don't even need any exotic matter.
Yeah, that was cool. That was the big deal here. So if you're following along with the warp drive story, first of all, it was just total crap. It's something put on Star Trek so they could visit planets. And then it was, well, you know, it might actually work. You could actually create a bubble and move it. And so then Next Generation had this whole warp bubble thing they did for a while. But who could make a bubble? You'd have to have negative mass, negative energy. Well, this guy has finally solved that problem. He's like, you don't need to have exotic matter energy. You can use regular energy and just make a warp drive like that. Now, the problem is the energy is like, you know, 10, 20 orders of magnitude beyond anything we could produce right now. But at least it's like regular energy, right?
Well, just tap into the sun.
Yeah, they need to make a sun in a box. If they could make a sun in a box thing, that'd be perfect.
They've been working on that, Daniel.
Well, yeah, it's fusion.
That was a big. I know when I was a kid, it's like, oh yeah, in your lifetime there will be fusion power, and then all the world's problems will be gone.
The fusion story, I hate to laugh at the misfortune of others, but oh my God, Europe spent billions and billions of dollars, and it may be, knock on wood, I hope it is, that you know, $10 or $100 million in this idea that they're having in the States might pay off instead of all that money. That would be sad. But it would be sad, but it would be kind of funny in a human way that so many times we've spent so much effort doing stuff that is expensive to us and precious to us, and some schmuck comes up and says, hey, here's like, you do this really easily. And that's, you have to laugh.
Yep. I had a friend who, you know, what the batteries used to have that little gauge on the side of it. You could squeeze the battery, and then it would tell you how much juice is left in the battery.
Yeah.
And he worked for this chemistry company, and this lead chemist had been working on this idea for like a decade. And they hired this new kid out of school or whatever, and he comes in 6 months figured it out or something like that, and then became a rich guy because he got it, you know, the patent included him. But and then, of course, that destroyed his life. But at any rate, I don't know if it did. It's probably going to go get destroyed anyway. But anyway. So at any rate, right? Sometimes you don't know what you don't know,
right?
And you need a fresh set of eyes to see something.
Right? I got into this essay stuff I'm doing in the research by being interested in startups. People keep asking me in the .com boom, hey, why don't you join this startup? We've got all these wonderful options, and I was like, I don't know. I can't pick out what's going to work or not. And that bugged me for years. And so finally I decided I was going to learn about startups. And a big part of it's just right place, right time with all these random bits of knowledge you've picked up in various places. It's just, you're the guy.
Yep. There you go.
And it sucks if you're not that guy.
You build it and no one cares.
Yeah. You build it and nobody comes. Yeah. Git undo. This guy wrote a git undo function. And while his function's pretty easy to understand, because who doesn't want to undo stuff, I thought the really cool part of this was the Hacker News discussion when people talked about Git, understanding Git, reading about Git, using Git, and then coming off in some kind of weird edge case at some point and just being flummoxed about what the hell's going on here.
I mean, so Git undo wouldn't work then?
Yeah, it does work. I thought the interesting thing was, for instance, I don't do a lot of rebasing since I do a lot of soul development. So I'm just basically pushing. I'm adding, committing, and pushing.
Yep, I use it like Subversion.
Yeah, but I mean, there are folks that are doing. You can do some really complex workflows, and if you're not in, if your head's not in that space, you just wander a little bit off the path, and it's just you feel completely lost with the tool, which is odd.
Yeah.
I love Git. Don't get me wrong. I didn't understand it at first because I'm like, what the hell's so hard about source control? And now I understand what they've done is a hash-based, basically file, sort of a zipped file system, which is makes it peer-to-peer and you set up your own workflow. It's cool stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, not being a real like Git expert in any sense, like I said, I'm a Git. I use it like SVN. But this command git reflog, you're going to get flogged again. Is there a git flog also?
Yes, git reflog. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's such a good tool. It kind of reminds me of the sort of the C++ version of source control. It's like, write hello world, you do some integer adding, and you're fine. But if suddenly somebody throws a smart pointer at you or some STL, you're like, what, you know, you completely die at that point. You have to.
That's right. Yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah, hard stop. Everything.
Yeah. I'm glad there's people that decode it for me.
Yeah, it was funny because I was working the team a year or two ago and we were talking about working remotely. And my guys, I have to tell you right up front, you know, I haven't had a lot of experience working with teams in Git. So I'm going to be either asking questions or like it's going to be a half hour or so when I get stumped. And they were okay with that. But it kind of sucks to have to say that.
Well, you can't know everything.
You can't, and I think as a consultant, especially coming into outside teams, you never know what they're expecting you to know.
Yep.
And so if you're really ego-free, you just say, hey, I know this, I don't know that. But a lot of teams, they have this pecking order kind of thing going on, and say you don't know.
I've been in situations with other consultants where they have this idea that they have to know everything.
Yes.
And I think it's okay to say, I don't know that.
It has
to be. Let's figure it out. Right?
It has to be okay. And I think, to me, maybe you're better at this than I am, but to me, it has to be an in-person conversation.
Maybe, yeah. But now you can't have it.
Well, yeah. See, the thing is there's various levels of I don't know, okay? So we were talking about this last week. You know, I can know the language, know the environment, I know the business problem, and not get hung up on some obscure piece of that, which that's one kind of unknown. Or I could have a lot of experience in similar areas, and I just know I need to translate it. That's sort of a different level. Mm-hmm. Then there's this, hey, you guys actually program computers here? And so you have to have a very subtle conversation about exactly what you know or don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but let's just say that you happen to be proficient in C#, and you wanted to write some meaningful tests. Now, I don't know enough C# to actually do anything really interesting, but I know enough to be able to help you do that, right?
Right.
Even though I would probably pick the wrong libraries to use, but that would be up to you to pick the right ones. If you know what you're doing,
right,
then I could help you with that if what you're trying to do is figure out how to test stuff.
So I try to come up with projects once a year, twice a year, and I try to come up with projects, personal projects that take me places I haven't been before. I think next up may be Haskell and cryptocurrency. Not sure. But part of that is like you know the patterns of development. Like I know I want an OO tool. I know I'm going to want some sort of in-unit type testing, and I'm going to have some sort of logging solution. You kind of know you've been through that area several times, and then you're just having to pick up and instantiate that in some different kind of paradigm.
Yeah, and go look for similar things in the new playground, right? Yeah.
But if you just say, I don't know, they might think you just, came out of school right. last week or whatever, took a mail order course. So.
Yeah, okay.
I think some of the best environments I've been in as a consultant and a coach are the environments where we go out for breakfast every day. And if there's something about eating, there's something about sort of starting your day off, especially for an ego-free environment. You can just sort of, hey, what are you doing? Okay, what are you doing? And you get a good feel for where everybody's at, what they're doing.
You could do that at the bar, too, afterwards.
I've done, that actually works as well. I've worked with people, and I'm not one of them. I've worked with people that, they built their whole business around just taking clients out to the bar after work.
Yeah. The company I used to work at, we used to have somebody could come by and call for Virtual Friday any day of the week. And that meant we'd all go meet at Chili's or something and go eat taco chips and drink beer.
I'll never forget the first startup I worked at. They had grown, they'd started with 8 people and credit cards, and it got up like a 600. It was only a year or two later. So, they were growing like crazy. But they had like beer Fridays. So, Friday afternoon come along and I'm programming, and it goes, hey, you're going out for beer? I'm like, well, when I'm done, he's like, well, the truck's here. I'm like, the truck? What? Oh, like the heavens open, there's choir singing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good when the company has that culture of give some people some wind down time.
That's true. And they also had a token for taxis, so you could not have to worry about sending people driving. It was good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
It's better when the company sponsors that and people are trying to look out after one another than if you just sort of all run out to do shooters or something. Because that can go badly. From what I understand, that can go badly.
Yes. I've heard it could, too.
Yeah.
Dan, some of these websites that you've got links to, they like try so hard to annoy you with all their ads.
They do. I've got. I don't run JavaScript unless I trust the site, and then I only run it maybe the first time I load. I've got my locks in.
Yeah. What do I do to get rid of all these? Is there just turn off the pop-up blocker or what? Turn on the pop-up blocker.
So what I've got is I've got the DuckDuckGo privacy thing. I've got the DuckDuckGo privacy, and I used to have AdBlock, but then they sold out. I'll send you a list. I keep about half a dozen.
Some other time.
Yeah, Ghostrily. There's a few things that I keep that, because I don't want you bugging me. I got stuff. This next article is about a star VVV-WIT-08, the giant star that blinked. And they, long and short of it, they found this big star that somehow blinked. They don't know why. And then there's this whole string, and there's another article right after it. This is Epsilon Aurigae, astronomy's longest-running mystery show. And so I don't know if you've seen this before, but this started, they've been taking astrophotography for 100, 120 years now. And somebody had the idea of going back and looking at the plates like from 100 years ago and comparing them to today, and they found stars that disappeared.
Yep.
So, you can wink if you want to. You can move, which is fine. You can blow up. But disappearing stars is kind of odd.
Well, Cepheid variables have been used for determining distances to things. And so this is maybe the thing that struck me here is it's like it's got to be an eclipse of some sort.
Yes.
But what do I know?
That's what I'm saying is that when you can directly observe the star, you can check the spectra, you can see the change over time to see if it's a variable. There are things that you can see happening, but when it just kind of goes away, when you look at it, you go do some other thing, you come back and it's gone, then you're left speculating. Eclipse would be my thing, but if it eclipse for, 100 years.
Dyson sphere.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but really.
Is it a Dyson sphere, Daniel? They just turned it off for a little while?
The only thing Dyson make was a sphere. I thought he did like a vacuum cleaner. It's like the aliens are just doing like building spheres Dyson. Everywhere.
It's a different Dyson.
Okay.
Did you ever read that sci-fi book? I can't think of the name of it right now. But
Ringworld?
Ringworld is like, the ring version of it. This is where, the people on Earth are watching this star and all of a sudden it just disappeared, like you're saying here. And it turned out what, you know, what they surmised was that they built a Dyson sphere around it. We had somehow faster than light travel at this time, but we couldn't get to that place too quickly. But you could get to somewhere in the where the event hasn't happened yet.
They went around a nebula. I read this book. Oh, what was it?
Yeah, they went somewhere else.
Yeah, they went around a nebula to look from the side to see what was going on.
Yeah, and then when they discovered it is a Dyson sphere, then they thought, oh, we better be afraid. Yeah. Because whatever could actually put a sphere around a whole sun probably is really powerful and wants to be left alone.
Yes. But so the point here isn't that it's aliens. It's really more about the science part of like we continue to observe things in the universe, especially if, this is the golden age of astronomy. If I had to start over, I would probably be an astrophysicist because they're seeing stuff that they can't reproduce and doesn't match up with the current physics. And they're like, well, what the hell? How does this work or not? Yeah. Fun stuff. Yeah.
So let's get this picture of Epsilon. Okay. Aruge. How do you say that?
It's not Arugula. It's Epsilon Argi.
Argi. Yeah, and so it looks like it's going into like some kind of cloud of some sort, huh? Or being hit by a disk.
Yes. See, that would be, if you're looking at a sort of multi-year occlusion, then you would have to be some sort of planetary disk, protoplanetary. It would have to be some big thing. And either that or something closer to you. So you're sort of guessing.
If it's closer to you, it probably wouldn't be periodic if it's closer to you. Right? If it's closer to it, it could be periodic where we maybe have an opportunity to see it regularly. I don't know.
Yeah, this fast radio bursting. We're seeing all these things.
Something orbiting in and out of, you know, some medium like this picture. Now that I've seen this picture, that's probably why I'm imagining it.
Yeah, the idea of a huge disk that would occlude something for a period of years or kind of make it wiggle. And I think Betelgeuse is kind of doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, something to be gone for 50 years. It's not that 50 years matters. It's just we're just little kind of puny humans. We don't know if it's going to be another 5,000 years we can't see it or another year. And so it kind of leaves you with, hey, it would be really nice if we studied that star before it went away.
Yep. But this Epsilon, it's doing this every 27 years or so.
Yes.
You know, so it has, well, maybe I would just surmise that it has some orbit where part of its is occluded by something that's in some sort of orbit as well. I don't know. Maybe they're in a dance together.
Yeah. This is, it gets to the three body problem. We can't predict gravitational pull amongst three bodies. There's
celestial sleight of hand.
Yeah. It's really neat. Huh? Okay. So this is we're kind of getting near the end of the show here. And I both found a cool video and I found this whole genre of stuff that I kind of knew it was out there, but I didn't really know it was out there. And this is fake hacking stuff, okay? So it's either people you see doing ridiculous stuff, hacking on the movies or TV, or it's things you can, like, show your friends to look as if you're hacking. This next one is an NCIS show. You just got to see this. I'm going to run it while we can't. Okay. So it's this lady, she's supposed to be hacking into something, and she's got a bazillion little screens off. Look, she's typing, these screens are flashing everywhere. And this guy comes, he's like, oh, wow, I need to join you so we can hack twice as fast. He looks for a little bit, and then he starts, then they both type. It's like four hands on the keyboard typing, all the screens are flashing around. I'm like, oh, wow, geez, four hands, one keyboard, bam. I can't even see what they're doing, but they're both doing coding really fast. This other guy comes up with like a bologna sandwich and watches.
Yep.
I mean, who among us hasn't done the four-handed hack into the...
Yep, and the boss goes and solves the problem.
And I started down this path. And so there's this other show. What was it, Scorpion? Okay, and the theory is...
pulls the plug.
The theory of this Scorpion show, and I did put the link here because there's just half a dozen, is that the airport's computer has crashed. And that caused all the airplanes getting ready to land, caused their computers to crash. Now, never mind, it's a sunny day, and there's, like, no clouds in the sky. But the planes can't land because their computers are crashed. And so our hero says, okay, I know what I'll do. I'll help one of the airplanes reboot their system and reinstall, I guess, Windows or whatever they're running. And then they can share their OS with the other planes, and all the planes can land. So it's like, oh, that's realistic enough. How are you going to get that into the airplane? Well, I'll just get in my sports car, drive down the runway, pop the top off the sports car, and the plane will fly alongside and drop a Cat 5 cable out of the side of the plane. And then I'll plug the Cat 5 cable into the notebook and do the rebooting. And if that doesn't sound stupid enough, it's actually video of this. So he gives them the Cat 5. They take the notebook. They reboot the plane's computer while it's flying over top the sports car. And then all the airport and all the planes are saved.
That is amazing ingenuity.
I had no idea this was this exciting. I spent like half a day trying to get a button gray. And this guy, you get sports cars, all this. This is awesome.
They have spare Cat 5 cables on airplanes?
Jeez. Oh, yeah, this guy. So the guy goes back in the plane. He's got like a tower, like in the back somewhere. And he pulls this cable. He's got like 80-foot of Cat 5 cable because maybe it. I don't know why he got 80-foot of cable. But then
and so the
he opens the door.
Through his moon roof.
Yep. Speeding down. And this Cat 5 cable come down.
Oh, damn, I don't have that connector.
Yeah. It'd be funny if it were like Cat 8 or something, the other connector. There's also a site that you can go to if you want to convince people that you are hacking and you're awesome. And basically what it does is it's a sort of a green screen blank web page, and all you do is just bang on the keyboard. And as you bang on the keyboard, little words appear. It's like C code, I think, and they add comments. Mm-hmm. It's a good C code, if I understand. But you just bang on the keyboard, and it looks as all this sort of official-looking programming comes by. If I could, who knew this hacking stuff was so cool? This is awesome.
So what's it called? Fake hacking website?
I've got that somewhere else. I'll put this on the list here. But yeah, it adds comments. I believe it's, if I remember correctly, it's C code. I couldn't figure out what it was. I bring it up, there's just blank screen. I'm like, well, what the hell is that? And finally, just out of frustration, I banged on the keyboard and code started appearing. And the more I banged, the more code. It's like, oh, okay.
I just say you must have too much time on your hand. You really
you keep
did
saying that. I got too much time. What do you do with all your time, anyway?
You really did let the mongooses raise your kids.
Yeah, I think you're making some aspersions here, James. I don't know. Let's see. Yeah. What do I do with all my time? Well, here we have a Hello World program that took all 5 minutes to create. So the other day I get up. What do I do with my time? The other day I get up.
This is Hello World?
Yeah, and there's like a world there as well. The other day I get up, I decide, you know, I'm going to take this project I did last year and make it into a template. I'm going to put it on GitHub. People can use this template. It's going to be cool. And I go sit down at Visual Studio Code, and it doesn't work. So then I spend the next 4 hours on this computer and my three other computers getting Visual Studio Code working on all of those. By that time, it was after lunch, and I didn't want to do this anymore, so I didn't come back to it. But I got Hello World right now. So yeah, what do? It's just I get frustrated by things that should not be frustrating me.
All right, so this is plain old good old Hello World in C.
This is F sharp actually. Okay.
It looks like C.
Can you see it any better? There we go. Oh dang. Oh.
Yeah.
There we go. All right.
Oh yeah. Okay, I can see it better now. All right, so that's Hello World, and it took you all day to get all your IDEs running.
Yeah, I didn't actually do any programming. Gee, what the hell? Why would I want to do that? I instead spent half a day, and the problem was .NET updated, and while .NET updated, I think I had my IDE open at the same time, so it lost all the plugins, lost track of the current versions of the .NET tools they needed. And I had to, of course, re-unfigure that out later. I had to reboot the computer, and then it worked fine. And I think probably the worst kind of error you can have is the one where you actually turn the thing off and turn it back on, and it works. Because then you really want to hurt people. Like, why couldn't you just tell me this, guys? Jeez.
I shut down whatever in the way.
Yeah. It's just rocket science.
I just got a message here from Ubuntu saying, I couldn't update some stuff. It's like, I wonder why not.
Actually, the other thing I did yesterday was I have a wiki I'm resetting up, And I went there and I wanted to add a wiki-based access. Wiki-based access means you can take your wiki and point to these public databases and actually pull in live information. And I just thought that was just slick as hell. So went in to set that up. And that was about a three-hour deal that I finally realized, oh, wow. I needed a composer. There was a whole thing. I don't think I have the resources available on AWS right now to run the install. So it's either then bump up the EC2 instance, a bigger unit, or stick with what I got and not install. It seems like whatever you do, there's always this yak shaving involved with it, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Yep.
Don't you get frustrated like this? I'm not the only person.
Well, yeah, no,
you're going to say, yeah.
I'm just saying my last week and a half, there wasn't a lot of yak shaving that I had to do because it was a problem that I was like kind of all the little pieces. I knew something about the pieces, so there weren't a lot of yaks to shave, you know, so I was lucky. Right, because I think I showed you the Vimeo upload thing I was fiddling with, and it turns out the Vimeo people made it real easy for me to have a script that will upload stuff and change names of the things that uploaded and put them, you know, replace videos. They made that easy, which, you know, is kind of what I need, is for it to be easy. Now, I've spent a week and a half on it. I thought I'd spend a day, but, you know.
I think the worst part when this happens is that you don't want to tell people. And so, you know, when you get hung up for 4 hours because the IDE doesn't work, well, there's probably some guy out there who made it work in 2 seconds. And if you say publicly, it took me 4 hours, they're going to go, oh, hey, you just do blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows that. And so it's like, well, why do I want to go publicly? It's one thing about being honest with a team you have to work. It's something else about publicly flogging yourself, right?
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
That's what I need my friends for. You know, I was talking to my family last week, and we're talking about Halloween. They said, Dad, you know what we can do is we can dress you as a golf tee, like this big green thing, and then paint little dots on your head. And then my wife said, you know, and then I could be a golf club. Guys, I don't like this idea. No, it's no good. No. They thought it was hilarious. They were laughing big time. Like, no, I do not want to be the golf ball with my wife being the club.
Probably not.
No.
You guys planned this far ahead for Halloween?
I guess they do when they see that I'm annoying them too much. I don't know. He tells one more dad joke, damn it. I'm getting a golf club after him. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, if you guys haven't stopped by the blog, for Father's Day, I did a special math dad joke entry. I've got about 40 different math jokes that you can annoy your children with.
All right. Oh, cool.
My gift to you guys.
Hey, so one of the only person I know that watches this this video, you know, the Nerd Roundup, my daughter from time to time watches Ellen, and she says hi. Oh, she says howdy, actually, at the Nerd Roundup.
Howdy, partner? Well, ma'am, that's just the way we are here on the range. You know, also the Westerns, they tip their hats when people come. That's just so cool. I don't think I've ever done that in real life. It's just
no, I don't. You know, you shouldn't be wearing a hat. You're inside. That's actually bad manners. Oh, you take your hat off when you're inside.
You know. Well, you don't know because of the green screen. I could actually be floating in space right now in front of the moon.
You're not, though, I'm pretty sure, because
actually, we learned that in the service.
I could be, too.
Oh, wow.
There's a real world back there, though.
When I was in the service, one of the first things they told you was you don't salute unless you're wearing a hat, which is, you have to have manners.
Yeah.
And the second thing that I learned, because I had to go to the
infirmary. Did you get in the way, though?
The second thing I learned was I didn't really know how to salute, so I passed this lieutenant, and I was in boot camp, and I'm running because you have to run everywhere. I stop running, and I salute, and I didn't know you're supposed to hold your salute until the senior guy drops his hand, and then you can drop your hand. I got a nice little 5-minute lecture about what you want me to salute you. It's like, okay, so these things matter. This paradigm stuff. You got to know what you're doing here.
Well, yeah, if you want to fit in, Daniel.
Well, yeah, maybe it doesn't matter. Yeah. You may have a point there.
Like, why? Yeah, if you want to fit in, maybe you didn't want to.
Consumed any TV shows, books, anything like that?
Let's see. Well, I'm working on the chemistry class. I'm into valence electrons, and now we're working our way into molecules. So I know that you're listening to the same thing. So I've been doing that. A little Game of Thrones. A little bit of The Wire, actually. You sent me that clip of The Wire, and the one that for 5 minutes all they use is the F word. And I was watching that, and Marilee said, "What's that?"
It's a good show.
Like, oh, something Daniel sent me. It's like, oh, does he always talk like that? It's like, I didn't answer that question.
Hell no. No, I don't believe in profanity. The Wire is great. When I first started watching The Wire, I thought it was like a cop show. I thought, well, this is going to be like they solve a mystery. No, this is actually a sort of a magazine story, a long-form magazine story they just sort of stuck into a TV show.
Yeah, and they've got the one sleeper guy there. He just finally woke up and just finally got engaged in the prom, the guy that's always working on the little models. And I've been waiting for that. I'd seen it before. Now, my wife had never seen it, so we started watching it. And, it's like this guy's like in the background, and all of a sudden he pops his head in and asks a pertinent question. And everybody looks, it's like, where did he come from? Is he part of our team? And, now they've actually discovered somebody to respect there. But then the two detectives went to the murder scene where all the F's were said as they worked their way through what happened. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was the best. I hated to lift that, but that was the best example I know of you don't need a bunch of words to describe or solve a problem. If you have good context to the problem, you just one word would work, really.
Well, I think what was cool about that is they were showing that there were two guys that knew exactly what they were doing together, yes, and that they could communicate just by going through their actions. So, like when your kids are little and they help you in the garage or, on a project, and you constantly have to say, okay, well, now give me the screwdriver, yes, now do this, now do that. And then there's some point where they grow up a little bit and then they anticipate what you need. And then they can see because they're engaged in what you're trying to do, and then they start to become part of that. And that was what was cool about that little snippet from The Wire, was that these two guys were so good at solving the problem that they were trying to solve that they could just do it together without saying anything but the F-bomb.
So the second really, really super cool example of this, and I don't have a tape. Have you heard the story about that? Was it DC-9 that sort of crash landed in Sioux City?
No.
Okay, so this is back in the 70s or 80s. There's a DC-9 flying cross country, and whatever happened, I think they had an engine blow up that took out their hydraulics and their backup hydraulics, which was they never
not
expected ever to happen. And so you can't control the plane without hydraulics. And they managed somehow to get it kind of level, and they're fighting it. And I think the guy tweaked the power to like tilt the plane, figured out he could use power.
I remember it now.
Yeah. Well, in the back, there was a United instructor who taught DC-9 emergencies. And so he tells the story. She's like, I teach this stuff. Can I go up and help them? She's like, the pilot said, yeah, come on up. And so here you have three professionals, one of which has never met the other two guys, and they're in a life or death situation, in a completely unplanned, disastrous situation. And they talk in little short words. Yes, no, got that. It never went more than 4 or 5 words, but it was just quick back and forth. And they landed the dang plane and saved most of the people on it.
Yeah. I remember that story now. They definitely were tweaking two throttles to keep the plane right in.
Yeah.
The DC-9, that's got two engines or four? It might have four.
Two. Maybe have been. Yeah, I think it's got.
Was it a back?
Yeah. It's a three. It's the one that had three. I think it had a tail engine as well. It's been a couple of years since I read it. But the problem with that, I wanted to use. That's actually the perfect one because it's strangers. But you don't have the cockpit tapes or any of that. But I remember reading the transcript, and they did not talk in long sentences. It was all about, look for this error, no. Look for that error, no. It was very much trying to succeed by avoiding failure.
Wow. And then highly skilled people that for some reason had to trust each other, right?
Right. Of course, they were able to eliminate, huge swaths of things they weren't going to worry about because they were familiar with the environment. They just had to identify unusual situations that each one of them saw that the other ones might not be aware of. And so it limited their conversation quite a bit to just, can I do X? This is a problem. Can I do Y? It was quick back. Yeah. And they all knew that they had to land the plane. They had a clear goal. They had a very limited scope of behavior. They had a life or death. They had good things working for them.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me wrap this. Let me wrap this thing up here. Okay, well, thanks for coming by. It's been about an hour, so I appreciate you stopping by. James and I had a hoot this week. We'll be back next week, or at least I'll be back next week. This is Nerd Roundup. I'm Daniel Markham. I will see you on the internet.